I'm John O'Loughlin. Welcome to McDuff Lives Podcast.
It's astonishing. It's something you don't want to know. You don't want to believe. You would rather that there are not any, you know, scary things in the closet when you go to bed at night. And you'd really like to not have them in a secret bioweapons lab under the control of a Joseph Stalin or, dare I say, a Joe Biden. Good afternoon, good morning, good evening, wherever you are. Thanks for joining me. I'm John O'Loughlin, and welcome to McDuff Lives. This week, I'm focusing all of my shows on this book because I'm just so delighted to have so much put together in one place, especially about the Soviet program. But then after we finish with just getting our understanding of how deep and old this biowarfare is, and learning about last reading, the Red Pestilence, the Soviet biological weapons program, the details of which, you know, you can check out. And there's actually a pretty good YouTube out that does confirm just about everything that you could ask for in terms of the scale of the Soviet program, the particular things they were working on, like tularemia, anthrax, cholera, plague. It's astonishing. It's something you don't want to know. You don't want to believe. You would rather that there are not any, you know, scary things in the closet when you go to bed at night. And you'd really like to not have them in a secret bioweapons lab under the control of a Joseph Stalin or even, dare I say, a Joe Biden. Wow. So let's get back into it. Again, suit up. It's not easy stuff, but I know you guys are tough, and we're going to tough through all of this stuff because Adam has put it together with the help of the great John Loftus. And by the way, John Loftus, I have three or four, I think just three of his books on my shelf. Only one of them have I read much into, and that is a shame. So I'm remedying that now. I'm about halfway through The Belarus Secret. And if you want to know what really happens when the totalitarians take over, whether they're Nazis or communists or technocrats, that book, published 1982, just after he served as the counsel to the Office of Special Investigations, the Nazi hunting arm of the Department of Justice. You know, this is, if I can just put a little bit of my own thought into it for a second, John Loftus has had this information for a long time, but he couldn't let it go because of the national security, top secret, and other ratings that you just can't do it. Not only that, but you probably endanger other people or put other people in a very bad position. But the real problem, of course, is that he would be under arrest and locked up for the rest of his life. But now something has changed. And what I think it is the death of Henry Kissinger. Because it wasn't until then that Adam was able to publish the book in December of 2023. So now we have the benefit of what John Loftus was able to tell Adam Finnegan over a number of years in the sense of just dropping hints. And Adam, being a real sleuth, dug into it to the extent of being able to actually translate the German documents through hard work. But more than that, we have a comprehensive story here that we're just getting started with. So let's get into chapter four. Chapter four, Spy Rings and Sabotage, Day X, and the operational phase of Soviet biological warfare. Here's a quote from Sun Tzu of The Art of War. All men can see the tactics whereby I conquer, but what none can see is the strategy out of which victory is evolved. The key to a successful program of strategic weapons for the Soviet Union would be done through espionage and sabotage. We know that British intelligence was highly compromised by Soviet double agents like Kim Philby, Donald MacLean, Guy Burgess of the Cambridge Five spies. It was the Soviet mole in MI6, Donald MacLean, who cleared Germans like Eric Traub for the Operation Paperclip program in America, which was the secret government program that brought Nazi scientists to America to work for the U.S. government after World War II, which was largely exposed in a book called Secret Agenda, The United States Government, Nazi Scientists, and Project Paperclip 1945 to 1990 by Linda Hunt in 1991. And once again, Linda Hunt's work was the main source that others built on, including Annie Jacobson. Jacobson's book is, of course, essential. And, you know, I have it at hand right here. And it's totally bookmarked and written all over because it's a great source. And Tom Bauer's book, which I read on the show a couple of weeks ago, very, very different look from the insider British angle of Operation Paperclip. And while I'm explaining things, just it might sound odd to you that it was Donald MacLean, the British MI6 agent, that cleared the Germans like Eric Traub for the American program. And, you know, why was that? Well, there was some gap in there. The British had him for a while, and it's not usual process that the Americans would accept somebody just because the British cleared them. Since British intelligence was so highly compromised at that time, it would have been infinitely less challenging to flood the corporate sector, pharmaceutical giants, or the academic world and scientific communities in America. Their methodology would focus in several areas of attack: germ weapons of all kinds, especially vector warfare with ticks, mosquitoes, fleas, and other insects. Even more diabolical was the sabotage of Western vaccines and serum. Aside from the already problematic nature of vaccines, these could be intentionally contaminated with stealth viruses and used to harm. Early Soviet scientists were clearly mapping these methods out when they began to study how to overcome the so-called sterilization of vaccines and serum. And here's a quote. In connection with this work, it was established that microorganisms exhibit a much higher resistance to powerful chemical and physical influences than that which was ascribed to them hitherto. Thus, Boshyan, which is Bosh-Yan, was able to isolate living cultures from nutritive media which had been boiled and autoclaved repeatedly. Having this high resistance, microorganisms do not perish either in the host organism or outside of it as easily as had been assumed. Notwithstanding the prevalent view that a sterile vaccine contains only dead microorganisms, cultures of living microbes could be successfully grown from many formalinized vaccines and also some so-called chemical vaccines. Numerous investigations of immune anti-tetanus serum, which had been treated with phenol, revealed that a culture of tetanus microbes could be invariably isolated from it. The initial live microbe culture could also be isolated from immune anti-anthrax serum and the active swine plague virus from the immune serum used against that disease. The identification of the microbes and viruses in question was quite certain. Microbe cultures were also obtained from many other sera used for medical and veterinary purposes. Unquote. What was so desirable about the vaccine channel is that the line between a weapon and a vaccine can often be hard to distinguish when it comes to the strategic weapons, because the side effects can, in many instances, be just as bad as a weaponized disease. Likewise, a weaponized disease of the strategic class can unfold so slowly as to be denied a disease-causing agent under Western standards. We have not mastered the unpredictable and toxic nature of viruses and microbes, nor are our bodies designed to handle the stress of endless vaccinations and prophylactics to keep up with this war. New weapons and stealth attacks of sabotage could resist antibiotics, contaminate Western vaccines, or use the antigens that cause the desired slow disease to unfold, because many of the antigens are too toxic and destructive long term, especially when given on top of those who already had stealth infections passed from mother to child, already immunosuppressed from other stealth infections proliferating the population. Section K, Biological Espionage and the Subversion of Western Medicine. A later defector of the KGB, Alexander Kuzminov, was another important Soviet official, quote, in the know, unquote, about the Soviet biological weapons program, especially when it came to sabotage. In his memoir, Biological Espionage, Special Operations of the Soviet and Russian Foreign Intelligence Services in the West, there were deeper, covert plans in the Soviet/Russian intelligence biological weapons program. It was Kuzminov's work at Directorate 5, Special Operations, or Department 12 of the KGB First Chief Directorate and its successor, the Russian Foreign Intelligence Service, the SVR, where he explains in detail the complex spy networks involving microbiology, science, and medicine. And I'm going to read a fairly long quote from Alexander Kuzminov's book. But as for us in Department 12, officially we assisted the government in carrying out the state agricultural and medical programs by obtaining from overseas new fertilizers, modern medicines, and biological products for medical, pharmacological, and microbiological industries of the country. But in fact, we were supposed to obtain from the West the intelligence information which would help to produce and perfect Soviet, later Russian, biological weapons in many possible varieties. The list of the espionage targets included Western government departments and state commissions, intelligence services, ministries of defense, agriculture, health, environment, civil defense, and emergency, secret military, medical, and biological laboratories, in fact, anything connected with research in the field of genetic engineering and the most dangerous human and animal pathogens. The department gathered intelligence information about plans for and means of production against the potential application of biological weapons in target countries. Apart from that, we were also interested in which academic and, at first glance, unthreatening conventional research experiments with recombinant molecules and biological toxins could be applied to create new types of biological and toxic weapons. Our department was also interested in which laboratories, institutes, centers, and private biotechnological companies were secretly involved in programs to protect against bacteriological and toxin weapons. We had to investigate any possible security weaknesses associated with those organizations and penetrate them. The other task of our department was to obtain new strains of modified pathogenic agents, samples of other novel biological materials from the West's secret military medical laboratories, and secretly deliver them to Russian clandestine laboratories, which developed and perfected their own offensive biological weapons. People were another of Department 12's prime interests, professionals in biological and medical fields, especially those who were involved in experiments with recombinant molecules, toxins, and pathogens of dangerous human and animal diseases, which could be used for the development of a new generation of biological and toxin weapons. We were also interested in government and army personnel and officials of intelligence services who had direct or indirect access to enemy biological weapons programs, as well as those who provided security for biological weapons laboratories and centers. Our goal was to recruit some of these people as special agents. We also recruited foreigners who could be used by the department as auxiliary agents, for example, those who could help to document and support the cover stories of our illegals, or even help with liaising them. In the memorandum, one occasionally met the phrases, quote, the instance, unquote, day X, and direct actions. By the instance was meant the Politburo of the Central Committee of the Communist Party of the Soviet Union. After disintegration of the Soviet Union, the instance came to mean the President of Russia and his Presidential Council. The formula Day X meant the beginning of a large-scale war against the West. Quote, direct actions implied acts of biological sabotage and terrorism against the civilians, the army, and the economy of a potential enemy. The potential strike targets meant civil targets, including public drinking water supplies, food stores and processing plants, water purification systems, vaccine, drug, and toxin repositories, and pharmaceutical and biotechnological plants, unquote. Many of Kuzminoff's revelations corroborate the story put forward in this book. Later, we will explore the possibility of their methodology in operation, showing they were taking full advantage of not one but several weak points in American medical, science, intelligence, and biodefense. According to John Loftus, there were extensive and very effective counterintelligence spy networks known as the Russian Kolonii, the RK, that the Tsar of Russia had employed. And the Bolsheviks who seized Russia assumed command of this network, and it became the Soviet Kolonii. While the United States had been so busy building the Industrial Revolution of technology and economy, the early Russians and later Soviet Union were busy continuing to penetrate Western society, corporate drug firms, medical and academic circles. It is likely they focused all their time, energy, and funding in these two areas, intelligence and biological warfare. I.V. Domorodsky, I'm going to spell it, Domoradskij, the Anti-Plague Institute, and the Plasmid Program. A third book on the Soviet biological weapons program from an insider was published by former molecular biologist and geneticist I.V. Domorodsky in BioWarrior, Inside the Soviet Biological War Machine. This was actually published before the works of Alibek and Kuzminoff, but was privately published without much publicity. In this memoir, he recounts his career, working on several infectious diseases like cholera and weaponizing tularemia, plague, and pseudotuberculosis. Domorodsky worked at Kirov, Rostov. Some of his work was also working on plasmids and proteins for weaponizing microbes under the cover of protein biosynthesis for applications in the production of agricultural feed for livestock. He gives a brief family history in which members of his family were arrested and disappeared in Stalin's Great Purge, where many were either murdered or thrown in jail. He then dives into his long career as a molecular biologist, in which he decided to pursue after reading a copy of Theodore Roseberry's Peace or Pestilence, Biological Warfare and How to Avoid It. Theodore Roseberry, by the way, was a prominent Camp Dietrich scientist who was also a member of the Communist Front Group, the American Association of Scientific Workers. What do you think of that? I mean, some people are going to go running to the research sources and look into that. Roseberry, huh? Theodore Roseberry. Okay, Domorodsky spent a great deal of time on problem number 5, which had been code for the biological weapons program in the Soviet Union. Domorodsky mentions the Biological and Toxin Weapons Convention, the BTWC Treaty, that replaced the 1925 Geneva Convention Treaty, which allowed defensive research, whereas the Geneva Convention banned the testing and stockpiling of biological weapons entirely. The Soviet Union signed the Biological and Toxic Weapons Convention Treaty in 1972, and since this new treaty allowed defensive biological weapons research, it gave them a cover to greatly expand their offensive biological weapons program like never before by merely cloaking it as defensive work. Quote, as I said in the previous chapter, my move to Rostov coincided with the transformation of that institute, which at that point began to emerge as the leading institute in the plague control system on problem number 5. My own deepening involvement, the gateway for me into the world of biological weapons, began here at Rostov with problem number 5. Since the early 70s, when the Biological and Toxin Weapons Convention was signed by the Soviet Union, the United States, and as of January 1st, 2001, 144 other nations, the emphasis of problem number 5 shifted. It began to serve as a, quote, legend, unquote, or cover story to hide the illegal and ultra-secret biological weapons program known as Problem Ferment, or Problem F. With the signing of the BTWC, biological defense was no longer a priority. Under cover of the treaty and unknown to the rest of the signatories, a greatly expanded and ambitious bioweapons program would rapidly take root in the USSR. Developing such a program became the main task of a super-secret group, the Interagency Scientific and Technical Council for Molecular Biology and Genetics. Problem number five became little more than a smokescreen for these hidden and dangerous activities. It was used both by the Ministry of Defense and by a new organization, Biopreparat, or Biopreparat, the civilian arm of the Biological Weapons Program, unquote. And that is a quote from Domorodsky. Domorodsky continued his assignments under problem number five, and soon he would be working on plasmids under the guise of protein biosynthesis for agricultural foodstuffs at Glavmikrobioprom, noting that, quote, the entire Soviet biological weapons program went underground, and some kind of cover was needed to hide the fact that illicit research was going on. Biopreparat provided the bureaucratic cover, unquote. Domorodsky discusses many of the endless quarrels in meetings he was to attend, and in particular, he mentions informants to the KGB of scientists and academicians involved in the military program by reputable scientists with the West, V.M. Zhdanov, U.A. Ovchinnikov, and G.K. Scriabin. And this is another quote from Domorodsky. The organization of the Military-Industrial Commission itself was far removed from science. Its directors and staff were mainly officials as well as military men. In order to devise future defense industry plans, therefore, the commission used our civilian scientists to gather information, which they used to recheck the data derived from intelligence. First, these civilian scientists gathered and analyzed all published data on molecular biology and genetics, and presented a summary of this data to the commission. Second, they visited the most important conferences abroad and helped the commission analyze material submitted by the main intelligence service. Taking part as active informers were the famous scientists U.A. Ovchinnikov, G.K. Scriabin, and particularly V.M. Zhdanov, a noted virologist who had initially proposed the worldwide eradication of smallpox and who had won the high regard of many Western scientists. He was also responsible for many original ideas in virology. Zhdanov, that's Z-H-D-A-N-O-V, had traveled abroad extensively and had often received foreign guests. This sophisticated, worldly man was therefore a great asset to the military. Every time any of these scientists took a trip abroad, they had to present a report to the commission. Most probably, agreeing to gather such information was an indispensable condition for any foreign travel. All discussions with these scientists were held in secret in the Military-Industrial Commission and were not even disclosed to the heads of the academies of science and medicine or the relevant departments. These discussions focused on the necessity of matching Western results in the fields of molecular biology and genetics in order to develop an effective, sophisticated bioweapons program. They also addressed the creation of a special scientific and practical organization to implement this program. Domorodsky reveals the extent of secrecy and compartmentalization from even regular military and state officials, reinforcing the idea that everything is disguised under covers like agricultural, medical treatments, and vaccine production, and a weapon is never spoken of as a weapon. Quote, it was therefore interesting to see how Yurikov solved his problems at party meetings. Since only a few party members were admitted to any secret business, maybe 30 out of about 500 people attending, and since builders and laborers were predominant among the communists, everything was said in figurative language, especially when discussing the results of any scientific work, especially instead of calling a spade, as Yurikov would in his own meetings, at party sessions he camouflaged our work by referring to our, quote, newly developed vaccines or, quote, methods of treating dangerous diseases, unquote. Lev Zilber, M.P. Chumakov, and Soviet tick research. The Soviet program had an extensive amount of research concentrated in tick research for the stated purpose of research in biological weapons. To vector encephalitis viruses and neurotropic animal viruses that resembled polio. This was being mapped out in parallel with the study of animals and insects in the wild that spread human infection and study their stealth qualities and the ways in which they could be transmitted. Once they assimilated the work of Ansel Reims and Eric Traub at the end of World War II, they gained an exceptional understanding of the nature of dormant viruses and how to reawaken these viruses under physical stress from the toxic reaction of certain antigens or spike proteins. In 1937, the Soviet Union began testing new biological weapons on the Muslims and Mongolians in the Siberian and southeastern Russian territories. Soviet academicians like M.P. Tumakov and Lev Zilber headed these expeditions and testing activities. John Loftus gives us further insight from his sources. Quote, in 1937, the epidemics started up again in the eastern and southern regions of the USSR. Stalin was testing these newfound strategies with clandestine attacks using biological weapons to weaken his native Muslim and Mongolian populations. These laboratory-enhanced diseases were spread among the target civilian populations using insect vectors, such as fleas and ticks that were native to the areas. We may never learn the full extent to which the Soviets conducted bioweapons research through testing on human subjects. From the years leading up to World War II, all the way to its end, Soviet dictator Stalin prohibited all Western doctors and epidemiologists from entering the Soviet Union. It was in this period that most likely made use of the free rein on the population within the communist empire. In the Muslim and Mongolian subsections of the Soviet Union, it is believed that tens of millions of lives may have been infected through insect-borne diseases, such as ticks and mosquitoes, with around 2 to 3 million deaths. Unquote. More people died in Stalin's experimental phase of the Soviet bacteriological warfare program than perhaps any other biological warfare program in existence. Many experimental phases were disguised as epidemiological surveys and tick studies disguised as academic research. Later in this book, we will learn of how Western intelligence foolishly allowed American scientists to collaborate with Soviet bioweaponeers like V.M. Zhdanov, M.P. Tumakov, and former Red Army physicians to produce vaccines that would be deployed in the West. Upon further investigation, we will begin to see a disturbing possibility in which the failures of Western intelligence to put any resources to assess the Soviet biological weapons threat in the most critical days of the Cold War led to serious vulnerabilities, which left American public health and biodefense incompetent against biological warfare and sabotage from the Soviet Union. With enough spies and saboteurs in the medical and academic fields and drug firms of the West, the Soviet Union could have a hidden channel for large-scale bioterrorism. We will look at this in further depth in later chapters. However, it must be stressed that most of these weapons would be slow-acting and take a significant period of time to unfold and gain momentum. Even many generations later for the weapon to achieve the desired effect, tire and exhaust. Their strategy was always geared in the long-term sense like a patient waiting game. The result would exacerbate an ugly trio of chronic disease, mental illness, and cancer. From the early expeditions to the Siberian regions, the Soviets were able to launch and develop their vector program, starting with tick encephalitis and the Ebola-like hemorrhage fever viruses. As such, the hunt to mine and hybridize ticks, viruses, and microorganisms for use as weapons in ticks had begun. Lev Zilber would be jailed at the height of the expedition for spreading the plagues, along with several of his men. Tumakov had been one of Zilber's top scientists, yet it does not appear that he was among those jailed. Later activities indicate that Tumakov could have been high up in Soviet intelligence. In either event, the tick program carried on, and later tick hybridization programs were initiated with Ixodes ticks, that's Ixodes. In 1937, one of Stalin's generals made a declaration on bacteriological warfare to be used in future wars, and arthropods had been among the many means of delivery discussed. According to a later declassified CIA report on the, quote, Military Medical Academy Imeni Kirov, the expeditions by Chumakov and Zilber were focused on biological weapons through the use of ticks to vector their biological weapons. And this is a quote, part B, biological warfare. One high priority research project that was being conducted in this division as a result of a report from Siberia that the bite of a certain local species of forest tick, K-L-E-S-C-H it's spelled, was found to rapidly cause encephalitis. This particular kind of encephalitis was named Vesenilettni encephalict, which means spring-summer encephalitis, because the tick's bite results in the malady only during these two seasons of the year. As soon as word of this was received at the Academy, Evgeny Pavlovsky, the famed Soviet parasitologist, and a large staff of biologists immediately departed on an expedition to this remote section of Siberia to study this tick. The expedition returned some months later and expressed great enthusiasm over its findings and the possible application of this discovery to biological warfare. Reports such as the one from Siberia were numerous and came directly to the Academy. Another publication included an intelligence report captioned, quote, possible use of chemical, bacteriological, and radiological agents in a future war, unquote, leaves its demands in a threatening tone, saying that, quote, should any country consider the use of chemical, biological, or nuclear weapons on the Soviet Union, they will retaliate tenfold back on the West. Another report, titled Soviet Guided Missile, Chemical and Bacteriological Warfare in Hungary, mentions the use of rickettsia and botulinum toxin against the West, admitting that it was with the help of Soviet spies in the U.S. who helped obtain the formula used by the West. There are dozens of old intelligence reports of Soviet activities focusing in the areas of transmission and vector studies with insects, rodents, the environmental factors of disease, suitable vectors for various rickettsia and spirochetes, hybridization of ticks, parasitology, and various studies useful for a vector program. In fact, the well-known bioweapons lab in the Siberian area, Vector, is the location for previous institutes where the tick and vector program had its footing, with experimental outbreaks under Stalin studied by Lev Zilber, M.P. Chumakov, and their expedition team. Many conferences were held for areas of research to study the natural foci of human infections in a given area. The Soviet Union scientists had an exceptional understanding of stealth chronic infections, whereby the infected person will not show significant antibodies to confirm an infection, testing negative despite active infection. A December 1949 report, quote, Morphologic Characteristics of Acute Attacks in Chronic Brucellosis, lays out the process showing the incompetence of an antibody and blood testing to diagnose such stealth infections. In a July 1950 report, Preservation and Restoration of the Virulence of Leptospira is clearly bioweapons research disguised as scientific research. The spirochete Leptospira had later been researched in depth along with Borrelia, Treponema, Spiroplasma, and Mycoplasma in the American program. According to later Rocky Mountain Laboratory reports, Leptospira had been demonstrated to cause fungal infections in animals. In an October 1950 report, Health Campaign Continues, VD Decreases Mongol Population, discusses the health survey and the data gathering on the experimental epidemics unleashed by Stalin. We know many of these could have been prevented because it was known in an even earlier report, quote, Tropical and venereal diseases in the Soviet Union that show the successful control of these diseases were done by other measures, and thus, in this case, it was more or less left to spread. A March 1951 report, Hybridization of Ixodes Ticks, demonstrates the mass propagation and crossbreeding of ticks for suitable vectors of disease in line with the work taking place at the Medical Military Academy Imeni Kirov to produce new ticks that did not naturally exist, by crossbreeding them between compatible species to make newer species that could be more suitable reservoirs for disease agents in biological weapons. A September 1955 report, USSR Work on Hemorrhagic Nephrosonephritis, details Chumakov's work with tick-borne hemorrhagic fevers and its course of disease. It states that these viruses could produce silent infections in animals, and it reveals that Chumakov was testing the virus on mentally ill patients. Chumakov would work extensively with both tick encephalitis virus, Crimean Congo hemorrhagic fever, Omsk hemorrhagic fever, among others. We will hear more about these viruses later in the book. These viral diseases were the early forms of Ebola and Marburg virus and have direct connections to these earlier hemorrhagic fevers that appeared in these Siberian regions after testing bioweapons for Stalin. In 1960, a translation of E.N. Pavlovsky's Natural Foci of Human Infections was published in English. This book, while seemingly unthreatening research on its face, was used to study the problems and tricks of the trade when it comes to utilization of ticks as natural reservoirs for the spread of weaponized disease to the enemy. Just as Domorodsky and others had disclosed, everything pertaining to research in biological weapons had to be hidden under the cloak of benign research. The communists had been aggressively researching animal neurovirus diseases similar to human poliomyelitis since at least the early 1950s and certainly longer. The Soviet Union's Day X, against the West, was in full swing at the start of the Cold War. May I repeat that sentence? The Soviet Union's Day X, against the West, was in full swing at the start of the Cold War. This would be done with coordination from American scientists that were either helping the Soviet Union or being played as pawns by them, as well as saboteurs from within the biological warfare program of the Americans during routine testing activities. Let us now proceed to the story of German virologist Erich Traub, whose life's work is at the center of this story and a pioneer of the stealth strategic biological weapons. Wow, that's chapter 4, The Sleeper Agent. Next, chapter 5, the beginning of the Erich Traub story, McDuff Lives.